So we continue our second day of discussions on resolving conflict. We'll summarize a few points. Some of you perhaps were not here yesterday to fill you in. But before we do that, we just want to look at our little reflection homework assignment we asked you to do yesterday. And that was to think of a particular crisis of conflict that you had at some point, but you were able to come to some resolution. If maybe two or three of you can just share some experience in the past that was a conflictual situation, but you were able to come to some pretty healthy resolution. If you can just share really briefly for us to summarize what happened and the, you know, how you were able to come to a healthy conclusion, healthy resolution. This will help us for the next part of what we're going to discuss this evening. So can someone share with us some issues sometimes they can remember for the classical that there was conflictual situation, but you were able to deal with it in a way that you felt comfortable. Some issue you were having with someone or some people, but you were able to speak about it with the person, connect with the person or the persons, and the conclusion you felt somewhat comfortable with after having a chance to address the issue. Can somebody think of an area they'd like to share with us? Get us started with this evening session. Don't all raise your hand at the same time. We'd like to start off. Perhaps we never have any problems in our life. We are so transcendental, nobody bothers us. We bother no one. Everything is just completely sublime. Yes. So, Avon, you have one? Why don't you take this? We're talking about some area where there was actual resolution.
No resolution.
Okay. So you just hold on and people go on with the class. But in a case where things were resolved, anyone want to share?
Okay. This is Saturday.
I had this person working for me about 4 years ago, and was going very good. He was a devotee, of course he's gone devotee, but then he started going off on a tangent away from Mishkan, so there was a bit of quite a bit of tension. In fact, that in the workplace where he's working, a lot of people have come to see him to organize functions and everything, and I go, wait a minute, this guy's starting a temple in my country. So it started to get very, very, very uneasy. And in the end, something happened where everybody came in, and then there was a big flare-up, and there was a bit of stuff being thrown about the factory, so he said, look, I can't take this anymore, and I'll leave. So he was gone for about a year, and then after a little while, he came back, and he said, look, I can't take it out there. They're trying to give me a job in the supermarket stacking shelves. It's soul destroying. Please take me back. You know, and I said, okay. And he said, well, you know, what's happened has happened and won't happen again. And somewhere other we gone well since then.
Okay, that's good. So the issue was distinctly there. That was producing a problem. It was a problematic situation. It could have gotten worse. It could have accelerated. It could have just been something that was underlying intention and not addressed, but he addressed it and he felt comfortable with the outcome. Someone else can share a situation where there was initial conflictual and some discussion, some connection, some sharing, and from that there was seemingly a healthy resolution. Anyone else can share some short experience? I'm sure we have many, many times when there are some things that are not going quite right. Hopefully we're having chances to patch them up, fix them up, resolve them.
Okay. James, why don't you float with the microphone? Move quick.
I had a problem with my wife when we were here at Christmas time. Where I was tending to go to the program all the time, and I didn't realize that I was actually neglecting her spiritual life as well. So we came to some agreement where I would look after the children one day, and so she could go to the program, and then the following day she'd look after the children, so I could go to the program like that.
Okay. So initial, centered around the children and attending.
Initial around the children and attending the program. So it was a genuine issue. But instead of a fight, or instead of a protracted situation, he figured something out that he would go and she would also be able to go. They were both shared in the responsibility of their children, as well as the responsibility of trying to get spiritual nourishment from attending the programs. Can we have one more person share a situation where there was some area of crisis, but some resolution took place?
Anyone else? Let's just have one more. He's writing this on the board for us.
I had a problem with someone. At a certain stage, I was considering at one stage in my devotional service, I was considering on a sort of friendly basis, and then at another stage, they were in a position that was a leadership position above my myself, and I felt that they were treating me very sort of disrespectfully in a sense, or just like a young buck or something. I was thinking that I was a bit, I don't know, maybe because my small ego, I was thinking I was, wasn't it that sort of to be that, just treated like that. But at the same time, I just sort of basically took it humbly and sort of accepted it as my karma in a sense. And eventually they sort of started to sort of treat me more sort of nicer, more friendly, and
what did he say, Goody?
He survived that.
Survived that? Okay. Okay, fine. What we have been discussing is that, particularly in Kali Yuga, conflicts are everywhere, and they're also unavoidable. We're looking at the fact that success has so much to do with healthy resolution of conflicts. And where there's failure, where there's procrastination, where there's incoherence and stagnation, it has to do with a lack of being able to expediently or judiciously, righteously, be able to bring some type of resolutions. We're looking at the fact that in secular society, as well as in our own institution, that so many times we either underreact, and there's a problem, or problems maintain the surface like a cancer, or we overreact and we create lots of sort of a combative type of culture. Now, what we want to look at today
particularly a lot that focuses on our mission as being followers of Bhagavatam Saraswati, the Prabhupada, and of the bigger umbrella of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, particularly in relationship, you know, to Lord Nityananda. Now, one of the things we find is that in this age of Kali, that when Lord Chaitanya was ready to deal with Jagaya and Maraya, it became clear with Lord Nityananda's input that basically in Kali Yuga, practically everybody is deviant in different ways. And so better than to just finish them off is to make them devotees. So one of the things that we should be trying to focus on as Vaishnavas is not so much trying to smash someone, defeat someone, prove that we are right when there is some friction. But we are supposed to be the people who follow in the mood of Lord Nityananda, who gradually develop or move toward having the potency to transform others. So Lord Nityananda's position was that they should convert Jagan and Maraya, help to make them better people, show the potency of the Udama by connecting with an inauspicious situation and making it auspicious. Do you understand this? It's one thing just to get into fighting and combating. Everybody loses, doesn't matter who wins. It's like if two people are physically fighting and one person has gotten a black eye and the other one has given the other one two black eyes. And so the person who gave the two black eyes to the other one says he won. But at the same time, both have at least one black eye and they're surely bruised and tattered. And so win, but they actually have lost something in the process. People go into litigation, they go into long arguments, protracted, you know, grudges and whatnot. And all parties suffer in the process, even when someone considers that they have won. This is all the way back to the first sheet, when we first started yesterday. Yeah, just leave it there. Okay, let's sit over there for a while. So, one of the special weapons of Maya is just to keep everyone so distracted that we have no time to be about what we're really supposed to be about, our self-purification and spreading Yuga Dhamma. Just like there's sometimes delegations where someone keeps another person constantly in court. Even though they know they're wrong, they keep the other person going because after a while the other person runs out of funds. Or they get so distracted by having to have to defend themselves. You know, it takes a tremendous amount of energy in trying to defend yourself. Whether you win or whether you come out right or not, it takes a lot of energy. So sometimes Maya purposely tries to get the devotee's energy where we get distracted. And even if we're somehow gradually successful, we still have wasted so much valuable time that could have been used in other ways. So a devotee, if possible, does not just want to first give in to Maya, or either get so much into just fighting Maya. Both are different expressions of being controlled by Maya. Another example is the example of Haridas Thakur. Haridas, when the prostitute tried to allure him, he neither gave in, nor did he get into a combative mentality, but he did the opposite. He increased what he was doing in such a way that it transformed the consciousness of the aggressor, of the attacker, of the prostitute who's trying to assault him by getting him to take on a deviant type of lifestyle. Now, he could have stopped his chanting, really got on her case. Who do you think you are? I am a sadhu. What right you have to come here into my sacred space? I will deal with you and curse you. Your family, your village will be cursed. Huh? And he would have exerted so much energy in the process. He got distracted from his peaceful Zibajan. And even though he would have smashed her, he wouldn't have actually transformed her. He would have just chastised her, and she would have suffered. Devotee is not just wanting to hurt people and get back at them. Doesn't just want to finish somebody off, prove to them that they're nonsense. Because even in Kali, just like sometimes devotees get into preaching in such a way they just want to defeat someone. But in Kali Yuga, you even defeat somebody sometimes, instead of them accepting that you have offered something higher, you just become angry. And sometimes become even more offensive. So our duty is to try to see how to create auspiciousness even out of inauspiciousness. So we do not get distracted from our bhajan. We do not get taken away from our constant activities in glorifying Krishna. Nor do we get caught up in aparats or brought down by somebody else's maya. Sometimes people try to involve someone else in their maya because they don't find any other way to weaken the person, so you get the person just distracted. It's out of enviousness or whatever. So maya has so many unusual weapons. First, to try to get us directly involved in sin. If we can't get directly involved in sin, to get us just fighting against the sin, well, we still can't be authentic spiritualists because we have no energy, no time, no facility, no vision and wisdom after being so drained by dealing with the distraction. Who was it? In the case of Srivastakur, when the person, was the story of how he tried to defame Srivas by getting people to think that they were engaged in worshipping of Durga. So he didn't put a whole lot of energy in trying to show, no, I'm a Vaishnava Bhakta, I would never do something like that, go on a big campaign to prove his particular case. No, there was no need to have to involve himself in wasting energy in this particular way. In the case of Pallad, we see something quite similar. Pallad just went on being fixed in his devotion, raptured with the holy name, and once it's being almost oblivious, depending on Krishna. And because of such, we see how that Krishna even made special appearance, special incarnation, just to fulfill the promise that his devotee shall not be perished. May Bhakya Panashati, that Krishna is showing him. He is facilitating his devotee. And there are so many cases and examples of Srila Prabhupada, and even stories of Krishna himself, of Krishna has a chivalrous side also, his combative side. But there are several cases where there is conversion. Because even when Krishna kills the demons, he elevates them in such a way. Not just a matter of just destroying. Even when he annihilates the demon gets liberation. So, our duty is to gradually come to a point where even when there is conflicts, it becomes an animated chance to serve each other, to address a need, a chance to understand how to be a better member of the community, or how to add something to the community, hopefully. And even if we can't resolve an issue, it's a chance for us to look deeper at our own character and make improvement. Like sometimes we learn so much by looking at somebody who's a nonsense, like anything, and we get a chance to see what we look like when we do like that or do some of those kind of things, which now acts as a mirror to help us to grow in our own spiritual life. When we take the conflict only as something negative, then we get drained, we get defeated, and we often even play into somebody else's maya, or we become a part of the culture of deviations ourselves. It's not that every conflict can be or will be resolved, because we, most of the time, cannot always control what is happening around us. But we do have the choice about what response that we make. That's up to us. We do have the power to perceive and codify things in particular ways according to our conscience. So, what we want to go over, first, a quick 5-minute summary, and then go to our new stuff today. So yesterday we looked at the different kinds of conflicts, 3 types. Conflict of resources, conflict of psychological needs, and conflict of values. We said of all 3 of these, the most serious is the conflict of resources, or conflict of values. Resources can be just material things, commodities, psychological needs to be esteemed, to feel protected, to feel loved, needed, etc. Values have to do with our what we consider to be our sense of morality, integrity, our philosophy, how we see the world, how we see life. So this was the most difficult. And we said that when we're trying to deal with an issue of conflict, we need first to hone in what type that is. Otherwise, it's like trying to deal with a disease and misdiagnosing.
Therefore, I'll just try to speak loud. Therefore, as we misdiagnose, then we will not give the proper medication that brings the deficient cure.
Then we looked at another way of looking at types of conflicts. Some are intrapersonal, things that's going on within the individual, him or herself. A fight that's going on with the senses and the mind, fight that's going on with goals, with values, with aspirations, etc., within one's own existence. And then there is an interpersonal conflict that's going on with between individuals, conflicts that's going on intra-community, that's happening within one's own community, in contrast to conflicts that's going on one community versus another. We know we have problems that's going on within the Vaishnava community, intra-community, and we have problems going on between Vaishnavas and Christians, and Vaishnavas and New Age, etc. So, again, we look to see what is the caliber or kind of issue that we're dealing with, so we have an idea of what kind of resolutions we can try to bring about. So, many times, an issue continues because we are thinking that it's a resource issue, but it's a value. Or we're thinking that it's values, but it's also psychological needs. Or we're thinking that it's only needs, and it's all of these. Anyway, something to process. Sometimes we're thinking that it's a conflict between our organization and another organization, and the real issue is that it's an in-house problem. Or it's a conflict between 2 persons, but the real issue is that somebody is paining, somebody is having some trouble within themselves, and that is just spilling over and causing a relationship problem. So sometimes not so much the dynamic of the individuals, but it's more having to do with somebody's own struggles that's becoming so intense that it's manifesting in a perverted way, etc. And so to bring healing we're not in so much in dealing with the separation of the two persons, but the person who is having the internal disturbance. Then we looked at that we can see any negative emotions as just negative and hone in on that level, or we can categorize it as some area that there is a need, that there is a crime. We can see enviousness, lust, anger, jealousy as just negative things, and they are, of course, of unhealthy orientation. Or we can try to go deeper to look at what is really going on that's causing this person to express anger. And because our natural state is that we are part and parcel of Krishna, so we are all pure but contaminated, covered over. And so we try to see how to rekindle that purity, then we can go deeper beyond just the symptom that's come out, that anger, greed, all of those things is they're symptoms of something deeper. What is really deeper is that the different ways that we are really crying for love, we're crying for a sense of well-being. We are crying, or because in one sense every action is either a direct or indirect giving of love, or a searching and a pleading, or a demand for it because the fulfillment is not coming. Now, things that accelerate conflict, we're looking at that even when problems do come up, which they will, the unfortunate thing is how often that they amplify and they magnify. You know, whether it's the conflict, some of the conflict that you had here with your legal case, or conflicts with Ritvis, or conflict with people going to the Ryan Maharaj, or divorces, or conflicts with children, they all started at some level. And somehow, many of them intensified and amplified and went on and became tremendously problematic. So some of the cases that caused the conflict to grow was poor communication. A small issue, and then because of the lack of clarity in communication, it just grows like a cancer. Or sometimes, because of aggression, one of the parties becomes aggressive, the other party retaliates, reacts, and then the aggression goes on, and the posturing goes, somehow it just gets more and more intense, the confirmation. Then we have, you see, revenge. So, we know how this goes. Feuding can go on, and it can be transferred from to children, it can be transferred from generation to generation, or it can be transferred to one ethnic group transfers it to their offspring, and it goes on, like what we see in the Middle East and some other places. Frustrated love. This is one that's kind of common in, you know, among spiritualists. Because often as spiritualists, we try so hard to control the mind and senses, or we try so hard to be yogis, to be jnanis, to be shastris, that we kind of forget that it's about developing the heart. And so what can happen is that we can get into repression rather than transforming. And so we repress certain desires and needs. And so what happens is that it gets repressed, and then it comes out some unhealthy ways. Anger. A lot of people who are very angry, it's just, you know, just repressed, it's just sex desire. Or people are very much into controlling others, or they're very dominant. They're very erratic. Many times it's just this area here. It's lust, frustration that's due to what is really love that is not coming out, and so people become emotionally shut down, and then they have anger that comes out in different ways. Accelerating lack of trust. When there's too much paranoia, then one is thinking somebody else is plotting, someone else is deviant, someone else is lying, so they think, let me plot first, let me get leverage over this person. Or when there's lack of trust, even when somebody is speaking truthfully, one misinterprets or speculates and causes some issues of confusion. False ego is kind of self-explanatory. When there's strong ahankara, relationships will suffer like anything. selfishness, lack of sensitivity, that even though we are the most personal, we have the most personal philosophy, so often we can be just focused on external productivity, or we can be in our own survivalist mode, we become insensitive to others, and then an issue that could be easier resolved, somehow it doesn't. Differences can create wonderful harmony and a sense of unity with the word diversity, or where there are differences, it can bring more pandemonium, fragmentation, and it can go one way or the other. Blaming others, and also victim consciousness, where we are pointing at someone else, and the problem may be theirs or may not be theirs. But even to be too much pointing at someone else disempowers ourselves. I'm pointing to you because I can't do something, I'm saying you are the cause of it. I'm also saying I'm so weak, I can't find other ways to be able to do what's necessary. Or I'm so weak that I have given in to whatever Maya is going on with you, beyond my ability to be able to do something myself. Or my determination is so weak that I can't appreciate that Krishna is monitoring each of us, and I need to do what I have to do in spite of whatever else is going on. And victim consciousness is somewhat similar, where I am agreeing that your power is so much affecting me because I have no alternative to make a difference. And so this is minimizing the fact that Krishna can help us in spite of whatever else is going on with someone else. So this is, we look at the things that accelerate conflict. We can look at the things that help to resolve it. And some of the things that you just shared a little while ago, some of you who explained when you had an issue of conflict and you brought on some resolution. So here we had an issue, but there was a problem that who would go to the temple, who would watch the children. So there was two things that both that had to be addressed. The children needed to be taken care of. At the same time, there's a need for each of us to be able to come and have the darshan, hear the class, etc. And so, instead of letting it accelerate to something that can even cause aggression, can cause some type of revenge, and even divorce. Sometimes over just simple things, it becomes like a cancer that just creates such tension that then any little thing that happens, it becomes problematic because this other thing is so underlining. But in the case, what he did was consider that there was a need for the children to be taken care of as well as a need to go to the program, so they would alternate who would go and who would take care of the children. So what we have in some of these kind of issues where you were resolving something without even knowing it, you use very powerful techniques. Let's see. This is my idea here. This is one technique here that we should use as a technique of avoidance. Just blotting out everything. We'll look at that first. Let's look at before we look at what works and what doesn't, we look at one other aspect of types of conflict. Now, the most demonic approach, and this is the kind that the Rakshasas and demons actually use. We look at the stories of Kamsa and Ravana and Putana, etc. What we find is that their mindset is that their existence is based on destroying Krishna, destroying the devotees, destroying the piety. This is the most gross type of way of interacting and dealing with conflict. I win only by your destruction. That if you're still existing, but haven't destroyed you, that I am in difficulty. I have not won. My sense of well-being, my victory is based on killing you, annihilating you, kicking you out, getting rid of you, eliminating you. This is the worst type. There's a genuine problem. And the worst approach is I win only by finishes you off. And the converse is that you win by my destruction. So many times, majority of times, people in conflict, this is where they get caught up at. They get caught up in thinking that in order to make something resolved, in order to exist in some state of peace, that they have to destroy the other person. They have to stop the other person. They have to finish them off. They have to degrade the person. They have to discredit the person. And so this is very intense, because this means people are struggling for heavy, heavy survival issues to try to finish each other off. Now, the other aspect is I win when you lose. Here I win by destroying you. That's my win. Here I win and you lose. You're still existing, you still can be around, you still can be tolerated, but only I can win. The other case is you lose. I win and you lose. You lose and I win. That's pretty good, huh? As I win, okay? Well, you see the point. The point is that somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose in this one here. That either I win and you lose, or either you win and I lose. And so this is no better than demonic, where somebody got to destroy the other person. But you can see that even although this isn't so bad, that if one of us lose, we're going to be angry. There's still going to be possibility of something coming up later, because you won and you got me this time. But next time, I'm going to try to see that I win, and I'm going to plot and I'm going to have grudges and arrange somehow that it's not going to happen again. Now, in some cases, it's a lose-lose. I lose, you lose. There are many times people get so gross into something that they don't even care if they lose, as long as the other person loses. You know, they both lose their money, lose their house, lose their car. They just want to make sure the other person loses. And, you know, this is craziness. What I understand in the fight is that both people really wind up losing because they're both hurt. One may have lost a little more than the other, but they wind up losing. But now, we've heard this conception many, many times. But this is actually a spiritual conception. Because the spiritual conception is that dasos mi daso daso das. We see ourselves as a servant. And we have a duty somehow to try to maintain our spirituality and to do something in some way that it helps the person who is our adversary, if possible, to accelerate or to rejuvenate or to focus in their spirituality also. We have a duty to try to live with integrity. We have good sadhachara, we see achara and pachara, that our speech, excuse me, and our actions to be of a similar accord, and that should produce healthy sadhachara, a good character. So what we have to try to look forward to is what we saw in the Lord Nityananda, Haridasa Kaur, Srivasa Kaur, and many others, Pallad. There are many, many cases where it's not just a matter of trying to destroy, or not just a matter of trying to win and the other person loses, but a matter of somehow how to create some wholesomeness where Krishna is still glorified and the person is elevated in the process. Now, this is not just theoretical, it is not always so easy in some cases, it's not possible. Sometimes the best we can do is avoid the lose-lose. In some cases, it's hard to have a win-win because of the intensity of the situation, or it's hard at that point to be able to bring, you know, full transformation. But most cases, we can't bring this win-win because we don't really go for it. We don't even try it. We're mainly thinking, somebody has done this, and we're going to get them. And the apostle will finish them off. Well, he's thinking this way, and she's thinking that way, and I'm going to show her. And so it goes on this level, that I'm going to win, I'm going to show her, I'm going to prove to her that she's off the rocket. And then she goes for the fifth time doing this stuff, and I'm going to let her know she's not going to get away with this with me again. Huh? So it goes on this level. And by just thinking that way, we also miss a chance to look deeper. We showed earlier of what might be going on to really bring a real sense of, you know, of healthy resolution. So the idea, as much as possible, when something comes up, we should try to think, how can we use this not just to be engaged in combating? How can we use this not just to smash the other person? How out of this issue of incoherence can we allow this to help us to see what the needs are to address things so that the community grows? How can we use this to allow us to look at the relationships in a deeper perspective to see how we can be there more for each other? How can we use this so that it helps us to avoid anything like this happening again? And so this argument that we had now is allowing each person to understand the other's sensitivities, to help to understand the other's crisis, so that they can be there for each other, to remind each other, you know, of Krishna. And if it's just some distinct adversary, from the outside, how can we use it to help this person to know a little bit more about Krishna consciousness? How can we give them some mercy, even in an unconscious way, when we see it necessary? Now, here are five things not to do. When we had you to think about conflicts that have been in your life that have not been resolved, most of them will fit in these categories. Why it is still going on, or why only a small part of the issue has been addressed. The first one is what we were just discussing rather extensively. First of all, we can deal with a conflict, so we can just go into a combative mode. And so we put up our nukes, our guards, our fists, our mind, our resources, and we are ready to go to war. So this really does not helpfully resolve anybody's conflict. So much resources go into misuse, so much time, and whoever wins is not a real healthy win, because they have won by force, by imposition. And so all they have done, in many cases, is defeated somebody temporarily who has become an enemy, a bigger enemy, especially in Kali Yuga. The other way, which is the opposite, but just as bad, is that there's a genuine problem, and we somehow hear and do not hear, see and do not see, and just kind of hope and that it's just going to go away. Or we have the mindset that it's not for me to get involved, it's somebody else's issue. Let someone else handle that. Avoidance just means that later it's going to surface and be a lot worse. We've had so many things in our society where we kind of cover up, turn our eyes, ears the other way, consider that it wasn't really so important, or consider that, you know, nobody's going to find out. And in a communal setting, which we do have, is that it's only a matter of time before everything about everybody in different ways finds its way to surface. And so when we try to approach it by avoidance, then what happens, of course, is that later when it comes out worse, or when it comes out, people lose faith, they lose trust, they become very paranoid, And then, again, it brings acceleration rather than de-escalation. Now, this is very famous for us also. Role-playing. A role-playing is when somebody is trying to resolve a conflict based on supposition. Someone says, well, Prabhu, look, I'm the temple president. And so, this is the final line. It has to be like this. I am the regional secretary. And so, my idea is that this is what should happen. So, although we definitely are people who are to respect position, hierarchy, we're supposed to respect hierarchy because hierarchy is supposed to be sacred. Sacred hierarchy. That the higher the so-called service of person is, the more that person is supposed to be the caretaker of that which is sacred. And so we honor them because of that. But they're not honoring that, and they become a big disturbance and even add to fragmentation of an environment. Or their own role can increase incoherence. Or it can cause avoidance or conquests in areas. So the role player is not so much trying to see what really is the dynamics of the issues. But they're just concerned with, I'm in this position, because I'm in this position, what I want should be honored, and that's it. And so this will never really resolve anything, because even people who agree to follow, they do it grudgingly, they do not give themselves in full, and later they will even sometimes leave a project or they lose faith in the leadership. And then when the person genuinely has something to offer based on their holding this, the sacred hierarchy, most people will not even take it very serious. Band-aid. This one is common everywhere. Usually when there's a conflict, the main thing we want to do is do something quick. We just want to manage the crisis so we can go on and do it, what we really like doing, whatever that is. But in general, most people don't like to deal with their or anybody else's crisis. And so the tendency is just to kind of find an abandonment. You just patch it up, thinking that, okay, it's over now. Now, of course, naturally what happens is that, again, it finds some ways to surface, or because it was not addressed, then others start doing similar types of things because there's not a clear situation that this should not be allowed or this is the way that we are to behave. It creates a lot of ambiguity of such. Or you get double and triple standard. And so somebody has done something very serious and they've only got the little token kind of calling out or whatever, it's a band-aid. And then somebody else does the same thing. And then in their case, it's either direct avoidance or conquest. Or they're dealt with in a very heavy way. And it brings a stabilization of the community. Now this one is very, kind of unusual. Because normally, in most circles, this is okay. Compromise. Usually people are happy when they feel we have compromised. And that's okay for a secular society. And that's okay for just making things happen. But when we talk about deep transition or transformation of consciousness, bargaining is not a goal of what one should strive for. Yes, compromise means that both parties have agreed on something. But bargaining also can have later negative effects. Because bargaining means that both parties had to give in on something also. One party can feel that they gave in more than the other later, as they're looking back in retrospect. One party can feel that they were kind of coerced to come to the table to agree. One party can feel that the other party is still insensitive and therefore some underlying thing is there that later comes out based on some other situation that comes into this, into the environment. So even more than bargaining is if somehow if we can turn this into something spiritual, we can turn this into a game. Now the most practical example of that is in the case where in the case that is most likely not used. So in the case of husband and wife, all right? So there is an issue that's really causing a problem. That let's say something hypothetically. Say for instance husband and wife are having arguments and fights over there's an issue of jealousy. Okay? So it's so intense that any time the man tries to be kind to anyone, the wife just goes berserk. She thinks, just look at you. All you're thinking about is trying to have an affair with that person. Just look at you. All you're doing is trying to find a way how to not be with me, and so you are doing this service, you're doing this, you're doing that. That whatever happens, that she is just jealous as anything. Okay? So, of course, he can try to resolve it like this, and he can tell her, but look at what you do, and you are worse than me in this area, that area, and why are you worried about my little issue? Or he can just go into avoidance. She starts talking, and he just leaves. She starts, and his mind is saying, there she goes again. And she's talking in the house, and next thing you know, zoom, the car is gone, he's gone. He comes back next week. Give him a chance to cool down. Or he can say, look, woman, I bring the money in this house. You got a problem, then I'll stay home. You have nothing to be jealous about, I'll lock myself in this house. You go out and you make the money. Huh? You're so worried about any relationship I have, any interactions, then I'm the man. All right, so you go ahead and you do. Or he can take this approach here, a band-aid. And so she's very jealous. And so what he does is that he just says, okay, so if you have trouble with, particularly with that particular Mataji, I'll make sure that I have my deity service when she's not on the altar. Alright? And so therefore, they're not on the altar, she's together. And so, they haven't really addressed the issue. It's not really just that person. Maybe she's one of the main cases of enviousness. But there's a constant thing of enviousness in her consciousness. It gets more manifested on this Mataji because she's envious of that Mataji, because she's thinking she's younger, she's more beautiful. She cooks better and helps to make it attractive. But the point is that it's not going to really resolve it. Or he comes here and he says, okay, what we'll do is 3 days of the week I won't go out and I'll stay home. And the other 4 days I'll go out and do my service and go do my job and other things. I interact. But 3 days, well, 4 days I want. And she kind of agrees, okay. But then later she started thinking, what is he really doing those other days? And she's thinking, maybe he's stacked things up so that the days that he's out, he's doing more now than before. You know? He's organized his time, so he's in all his deviation those days, you know? Anyway, there was bargaining. But then later, there is some reflection about what could be happening, how they're still being not getting what they want. But now the idea is what we were saying earlier. So the enviousness is there. And so what he does is what? He wants to make it something even greater than this. Is that he looks and realizes that it's really a conflict of psychological needs. It's intensely not only an interpersonal thing, him and her, but it's a lot about what's going on in her own mind, her own consciousness. Let's look closer and see that what is happening here is that it's really the wife crying out, trying to let the husband know that she's really trying to say, hey, beloved, make me more important in your life. She's really trying to say, but what about me? Huh? Somehow, so much of your care, your affection, your work, whatever you're doing, is all for everybody else, but somehow, not enough is coming my particular way. So instead of just trying to bargain, or combating, or avoiding, whatever, or patching up, he's really trying to make this something positive. To see, what is it that I need to do to help her to feel more whole? What is it I need to do so that I don't have this problem coming up again, you know, a month or 2 months later? What is it that I need to change within myself so that she won't have this level of fear and paranoia? And this way he avoided all of the aggression, revenge, poor communications, all these different things that could have made this worse and worse. So he gets to a point that she hires a detective to follow him, wasting money and resources, and then gets to the point that any letter that comes out, you know, she's looking at it and she reads so much into it. Then she gets to a point where, you know, they're divorced. Then she gets to a point where she feels she got less out of the divorce than he did in terms of the assets. You know, how is she divided up? Then she goes to a point where she's going to get on his case. She's not going to let him when she sees the children. And it just goes into one thing after another. And she has a conscience of feeling that she's a victim. Now she's at home with three kids and no husband. And he is at his job in his car. He's running all over the place. Assuming, you know, we're not even being responsible for taking care of the kids or whatever. And so one thing that really was a cry for love that was not approached in the proper way, that where one did not try to understand the other person's issue, at the end, all parties suffer. Husband is suffering, wife is suffering especially, and the worst thing, that the children are going to suffer, as he promised. So, when we look at what we do not do, that we don't want to have that one person is trying to exist and be victorious by the destruction, elimination of the other. We don't want to have any of that. We don't want to have one person feeling okay while the other person is struggling or suffering. It's not proper for the husband just to think, well, I'm all right. The issue is you. Any more than it's proper for us as devotees to think that a problem is a Gurukula problem, or it's a foreign problem, it's a Grahastha problem, it's a sannyasi or a guru problem. No, it's a community problem, because ultimately it's something that's going to have effect, good or bad, on all of us. When we take something that's just an isolated problem, then we approach it for resolution also in isolation. And we cannot have a win-win. The man just thinks, this is just my wife's problem. Huh? People say, well, what's going on in the relationship? Well, it's my wife again. It's her problem. She is just so jealous. No, it's not just her problem. Because you are in the family with her. She's your other half, and it's affecting you, it's affecting her, it's affecting the children, and in many cases, it's affecting the community. So instead of just seeing it in that sense, we try to look at it in terms of how can we bring about healing by looking in a more wholesome way at what is going on, so that it becomes like this, that we are able to feel more Krishna conscious, and the other person is able to feel more Krishna conscious. Because whether it's two brahmacharis, whether it's a leader and someone else, whether it's husband and wife, that when there is an issue of conflict, somehow both parties' service is being interfered with. So even if you are right, you don't want to put someone else in distress or anxiety, because it means that then they are going to do less service to Prabhupada's mission at the end of the day. And so even if you're right, but if what you do has put somebody else in such anxiety, first you may cause them to make offenses towards you, or you're causing them to be less enthused about their experience in the devotional culture, in the devotional environment. So it's not just a matter of a person doing good in his or her service while somebody else gets in so much anxiety over it. Yes, we don't want to deny what we have to do, but we also want to keep trying to do what's necessary in a way that it minimizes putting anybody else into distress. And then it's a win-win. Just like it's a good example. Some of you have children. Are you happy when you see one of your children doing wonderfully, but at the same time, the kid who's doing wonderful doesn't really give a hoot or damn about the other children? Will you be happy and say, oh, so wonderful. You are just a wonderful son. And your son doesn't even care what's happening with your daughter and your other children. You would feel, what is this? Yes, do nicely, but find a way to encourage, to help, to reach out for your brother and your sister, if possible. So, Krishna and Guru, they're not just happy if we are just personally doing very well. They want to see that we're doing well, and somehow that we are inspiring or helping others to try to become more involved in a higher level of devotion also. And so, it doesn't mean going down and to, you know, denying, trying to strive harder or denying your own principles. It doesn't mean becoming less fixed in one's own austerities and devotion. But as we just care about others more, we can try to do whatever we feel that we have to do, but in a way that also plays a role in enlivening, encouraging, supporting, you know, the other person. Otherwise, we can function in such a way that we're just thinking, I have to go back to Godhead, I have to, you know, have a good sadhana, and if I have to knock you down, push you out of the way, if I have to avoid you, deny you, it's okay, because I have to make sure that I am Krishna conscious. So this kind of mood is more like a yogi, you know, than a bhakta, the one who is concerned about their experience, etc. So this is win-win. So now, one or two last things for this evening. So then we look at five ineffective approaches. We don't want to just do conquests, or avoid that if possible. We don't want to get into avoidance, role-playing, where someone is exerting their position, or some temporary type of solution, and even bargaining if possible. This is better than all the others. There's no other way. You come to some compromise, you agree to disagree, or both parties take on some of the burden. They get part of what they want, and they go on. But now, we look at what we really should be about. How being the servant of the servant, and how to turn something that is seeming negative into an arena that is actually positive. And these kind of techniques can be used for most types of conflicts and will resolve. Now, there are some reasons why some conflicts are not resolvable. One of the reasons some conflicts are not resolvable is because sometimes there are conflicts of values where the parties are not ready to make any kind of change. It's a philosophical issue, it's a life commitment, lifestyle commitment, and it is something that can't be transformed, bargained, etc., because it's just that steep. And so it can be, you know, brought from that level. Another reason some conflicts can't be resolved is that for some people, they are getting more from the conflict than what they could get from resolving the conflict. And therefore, they will do what they can to see how to maintain the confusion. Think of some examples. Say sometimes religious conflicts. Sometimes religious leaders particularly cause wars, fights with another religious group. Because by doing this, it helps them to consolidate their own forces. Sometimes politicians particularly cause conflicts with other ethnic groups because it allows them then to focus more on their group, their people. More people vote for them because they are all worried about another, you know, race group, ethnic group. So there are times when some people organize things in such a way to create problems. There are sometimes people who, you know, who are multinational businessmen who supply, let me see, weapons. So they want to see conflicts. They do what they can because they want people, they want countries in war. Because by such, they gain from it. So there are times when there is more gain from maintaining conflictual environments. And so in those cases, people really don't want them to be resolved. And when they start seeing some resolution take place, they find some way, you know, to cause a problem again. Another thing is just by some people's own mindset and personality. Some people create a conflict to get attention. And in some cases, the only way they can get attention is that they have to create a conflict. And so because they are so much starving for attention, and they're getting something from that, so they will continue a conflict or amplify one because they're getting more out of it than what they could if in fact it was resolved. So that we don't have an information overload. We'll just do this and then we'll stop. 8 steps for resolving conflict. And we'll leave this here, you know, if you want to write these down, because it's very helpful if some of these things you're able to pull forth and help yourself, your families, and also the community. So these are some ways of some very important steps to use that will give a greater sense of guarantee to be able to resolve any type of problem. Almost. Create an effective atmosphere. Many times, just this one causes failure. Say if two people are hostile toward each other, different neighborhoods, you know, different religions. If you're going to try to resolve something, you can't go to either of their places because neither place is actually neutral. And so sometimes you have to put the people in an environment where the atmosphere itself doesn't add to the problems, or doesn't remind people of the problems, or doesn't create some kind of bias. So sometimes just to take people out of a certain setting, or away from the dynamics of where the problem is, where it's neutral territory, and many times people begin to focus and think in a different way. This one is extremely important to be clarifying perceptions. So often people are arguing, they're in war, they're in, you know, some type of dissonance, and they're not even clear of why or what the other person has said or the other person has actually done. They're working on third or fourth, you know, level, you know, of submission. He said this and she said that, you said this. And when it comes to really to clarify things, they find out that they're arguing over a non-issue. Or they find that there's been so much acceleration and speculation, and it's just now they're having conflict over the speculation rather than the real issue. So create a respective atmosphere. Try to see what really is being perceived by each party that's causing them to have this hostility. And sometimes just holding them to the perceptions can bring about some level of resolution. Focus on individual shared needs. All of us, we always have so many things that are in common. And the things that are not in common can become overwhelming, and we can forget about what we have that's in common. Many times, as we try to address closer the things that we have in common, we see that those things are so important for us, and that we get so much from each other, we realize what we're not getting or the areas of problems are minute to what can be experienced and what we're sharing. So many times you have to see, okay, people are, you know, having it in the same temple, they're having the same servers, they're having, you know, the same guru, they have the same mission, same Vaishnava or organization, and then they're fighting, sabotaging, you know, each other. And you help them to realize, look, I mean, is this really how we're going to serve Prabhupada? So many things parties are doing together, they're doing sankirtan together, they've done deity service together. So many wonderful things they share and how they support each other. And this little issue, argument over, you know, $20 is just now becoming so pervasive that it's clouding over so many wonderful things that they actually have in common, that they share together, and many wonderful things that they need, you know, from each other. So then we remind them about this building of this sharing in a positive sense, is that this is what is positive in the relationship, and this is what you're losing by maintaining this conflict based on one or two things or whatever, how much it's clouding over it and interfering, you causing you both to have a lose-lose, etc. Look to the future. When we keep looking at the past, you've seen, you know, people get really uptight. But he did that yesterday and last week, and what about what you did, you know, 2 years ago? And people just constantly live in some incoherences from the past that cause them not to be able to come to any conclusion now. Or they're trying to prove the other one was right, the other one was wrong. They're each trying to prove their case based on something in the past. And the resolution is going nowhere. But sometimes you just have to let them know, okay, the past is the past. Whoever was right, whoever was wrong, let's not even go there. We learn from the past, not that we want to throw it out. If we throw it out, likely the same thing can happen again. Something happened, and it was serious, it was a disturbance, but we don't want to dwell in that only. The devotees are supposed to be forgiving. The Vaishnava system is that there's chastisement, proportionate to the crime, and then forgiveness. So there's chastisement because there must be clarity that this isn't allowed. And there must be arrangement to help the person become free of the karma, for the deviant thing. So there's chastisement, and then there's forgiveness. So we learn from the past while looking for the future. And so many areas of conflict get stuck right here because something did happen in the past that was unfortunate, and people just relate to each other based on that. They're not ready to bring a win-win or to turn something negative into positive and give the person a chance, etc. Not to be foolish, but the idea is to learn from the past. And then we generate options, free flow. Or this is like possibilities. So there's some issues going on, and now we're trying to see what is possible. We're bringing up different things that might could make everybody happy. And you hone in to those things, that there's some areas where there's a level of acceptance and agreement, and now you put a lot of energy into where there is agreement, so that now you got some initial agreement, you get the foundation to be able to build up on it for more and more agreement. And the last, that all this has been done, have a way to bind people, to remind them, by getting them to make mutual benefit agreements. So just like in this case, we decided that what we'll do is that we'll go to the temple and we'll also take care of the children. So we make an agreement that so many days that you watch the kids, and the other days I watch the kids, you come to the temple, the other one goes to the temple, and they make an agreement. And so 2 weeks later, is not, again, a problem, because there wasn't an agreement that both parties were clear on. 2 weeks later, he says, but I thought we were just doing this only because of the festival. And now you watch the kids every day. You know, I'm not going to be around here. But then they remind each other, oh, we did agree on this. And so that's follow through, on such. Okay, so this is what we discussed so far. Tomorrow, I want to get a little bit out of the all of the detail and look a little more at some practical examples in our own lives and ways to look at maybe some problems that we're having now in our families, within our communities. But the... who's back there? So, main thing that we see is that conflicts will be with us. They are definitely not going away. What determines our success is how we're able to judiciously, and in some cases expediently, resolve issues where both parties are ready to play into it. We just create war, even if we win, everybody is damaged by it. We try to avoid something, think that it's just going to go away. It's a problem. It's only a matter of time before it gets worse. We use the band-aid, and it's a serious issue, but we just try to minimize the energy put into it by just offering some pseudo solution. Then again, it's a serious issue that's going to haunt us at a later time. And even if we try to have a compromise, which is best, that's the only other thing we can do. But better, how to use it to bring about a higher spirituality. How to use it to help us to see what things we really have to be careful about in the community so they don't happen again. How to help that person who's had some problem now, to change his character, her character. How to use a crisis that's come up between two brahmacharis to help them to be able to support each other better and understand each other's character better. How to use a fight or conflict that's going on between husband and wife to try to see what is the cry of love that's there. To understand now the person's weakness so that we can help that person become strong. You know, when people are adversaries, they like to see somebody else's weakness so they can take advantage of it. When we are the well wishes of each other, a conflict helps us to see where somebody is weak, or where they have a problem, or what they have a need. Now, it's a wake-up call for us. How can I serve? If we value the relationship. If we don't value the relationship, this is an example or time that is bona fide to go into avoidance. If we're not going to have to deal with the person anymore, if this person is not going to be part of our life, then in that kind of case, the best way often to deal with such a conflict is not to have to address it and just to let things be as they may, because you're not going to be in association or whatever. But we know that that's not usually our situations. That we do interact, and we are concerned about someone's present and their future. So we want to be some way connected with them, even if we're not physically something that we did or said that has helped that person in their spiritual life. And if that person is devious, and we had a chance somehow to try to help them, and we didn't, then we sort of helped to reinforce their deviation. Because now they go somewhere else and do the same thing. Or sometimes even do worse. So let's stop there. And the last 5-10 minutes or so, if we have any questions over what we discussed so far today. We kind of gave you an information overload, but hopefully you know, you got the general gist of what's there. It's that we want to be more in the mood of Lord Nityananda. We're not just trying to prove somebody wrong, or are we so agitated that somebody is blowing our cool or disturbing our peace? We look to think, oh, I'm connected with this person. How can I serve? What do I need to change within myself to change the other person? What do I need to understand better in this person so that they won't feel so insecure? They won't feel angry. They won't feel jealous. What do I need to do to help this individual to be able to be more enthused in their service to the Krishna? And this way we get a spiritual win-win. When that person is now serving better, and you're also serving better. So anyone, any comment or question? Okay, so reflect on these things. You have a question? Yes, this can happen in siblings and in this general association also, where we have had some periods in our lives when we were not of the standard, or we might have deviated. Then we regroup, and now we're trying to go on in our spiritual life. And because we have had that deviation, we know what it can do to you, and what other negative things can come from it. And so someone we care for, we would like to help that person to avoid what we have experienced. But now it's difficult for them because they have been aware of our own mistakes. And because of that, they have less trust. So when trust has been broken, it takes time, you know, to build up trust. It takes interactions and relationships that are healthy or good examples, and the person seeing more and more good examples, and then they're ready, you know, ready to trust or take advantage of what we can offer, see, to them. But it is a fact that our past, you know, follows us, and sometimes people hone too much into our past rather than our present. Or many people feel, well, you had your experience, and you know, let me have mine. Let me see for myself. And so some folk, the only way they can learn is that they have to go through the actual physical experience. And you know, that's unfortunate. But what we can normally do is just go on stronger, you know, over our own commitments, having a stronger example that's good, trying to reach out as much as we can, but not to force ourselves on the person. Because if we force, then they develop an attitude, and sometimes, you know, especially if someone is an adolescent, many times when we really try to impose on them too much, they go the other way. because they feel that they have to exert their identity. And the more that big brother, big sister, or mother, father is giving their idea, then almost like as a rebellion, they run away from that and to do the opposite. So it's a very delicate thing how to encourage someone, you know, without breaking them, how to be available at the same time, not to impose, how to let them know that what they're doing is wrong, but still let them know that you still care for them. So it's not so easy. We have to try our best. With all of these things, we should also be very prayerful. We should never minimize the power of Bhagavan, that Krishna can do the most amazing things, you know, as we petition him to help us to be able to serve better. Any last question? Anyone else? Okay, so tomorrow we'll try to look at a little more at some interactive things if we have time. I guess it's our last discussion on these issues. This can be approached in so many, many ways. I mean, one can go for weeks and weeks in these kind of discussions because conflict resolution involves issues of trust, you know, it involves anger management, see forgiveness. So there's so many, many aspects to it that are there. But most important, it involves really caring for others on a deeper level. And so it's not just a matter of just overreacting or avoiding, but it's a matter of really being concerned that someone is having a problem.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah, it's a very good point. Yeah, this is powerful. This is really what this stuff is, that we should never minimize the fact that we really can help someone without even having to physically connect with them. That many times we can take on some extra austerity on our part. We can be praying for them in such intense ways. But then Krishna will reciprocate. Because there are times, especially with children, teenage children, there are times when whatever you do, the child's going to be angry at you. If you be around them a lot, they get angry at you. If you go away from them, they get angry at you. You don't care about them. You're with them. Why? What are you pushing me? Too much, too much. Let me have a life. I want to breathe. If you chastise them, they get angry. If you don't call them out, they don't care. My parents, they don't care. It's like whatever you do. So sometimes all you can really do is just try to be available as much as possible, but just pray for them like anything. And sometimes, based on one's own credits, Krishna will allow some of your credits to spill over on the other person. You know, many of you see prayer as one of the most difficult things, and it can often be a call for divine intervention. And so, as we become more internal ourselves, we connect more with Krishna, then some variables can take place. And that's why, you know, all this we're giving is just some basic social, psychological issues that are important. And they help us in focusing more, you know, in our spiritual consciousness. What we don't do with some of these things, it makes our spiritual life very, very complex. And causes, you know, it's like now, some of the things we have now our Gurukul kids, Sunnis in America, Ritviks, this group, that group. And so it makes life miserable in so many ways, or difficult for us in many, many ways. And so many things would not have gotten to this extent if there was more of the win-win type of consciousness earlier, or more the consciousness of trying to see about that person's needs to address them, rather than later having to deal with much, much, you know, larger needs or wants. So it's a simple position of really trying to call someone Prabhu and meaning it. You're my master, so I have a distinct responsibility to have some part in trying to assist you in your spiritual life, and acting in such a way that you feel more encouraged, and acting in such a way that I play a role in producing, you know, more protection, more support system in the community, so that more and more of us are excited about being a devotee because of what we're getting from the association. Okay. ISKCON found the child of divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Sivarupad Ki. Some of you want to still look at some of the books we have over there. You can take a notice of them if you like.